Yo, what's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Hashtag CB99 Talks, some combo breaker 99. All right, y'all, I'm back with another episode for y'all. Been kind of busy last week. Didn't get a chance to get any days in as far as doing a podcast. So I said, you know, I'm going to have to hold off until next week and do some episodes, you know, for y'all, do some boxing talk on one episode, women's MMA on the other, because I just been on the move last week grinding. So I was just able to do some videos, but I wasn't able to sit down and, you know, really, really go in on some boxing like I wanted to, because there were some big topics I just wanted to discuss and give you my two cents on. And first up, man, first topic I wanted to drop on y'all, of course, is, you know, everybody knows about this, but they haven't really talked about it. Paulie Milanagi getting fired from Showtime over some remarks about race and comments he made about race. People had some mixed feelings about this, you know. Some are like good riddance to Paulie. Some are like, oh, people are being too sensitive. So I want to give you my two cents on that. November 21st, Errol Spence Jr. and Danny Garcia. I've talked about this fight in another video. You know, it's going down on 21st. And I just wanted to once again give you all my reasons on why this is a good fight for Errol and why not to sleep on Danny Garcia. And last topic, Vasyl Lomachenko versus Teofimo Lopez. It looks like the fight is actually getting closer to being made because Vasyl Lomachenko, he's actually willing to take a pay cut going into this fight to make it happen, you know, to help satisfy Teofimo, who feels like he's not getting a fair share of the pot. But that's something I just want to discuss in general, too, about, you know, young champions now really not necessarily knowing their worth, but really, really trying to outprice themselves. So that's something I want to talk about. But first up, man, just to kind of give everybody an update too, you know, I know y'all looking forward to this fight. You know, Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr., the fights moved from September 12th to November 28th. It was actually going to be on weekend. I was off from work too, but now they pushed it to a weekend after Thanksgiving. I'm not off work, so I'll probably still be able to watch it somehow. But yeah, as you know, Mike Tyson and Roy Jones, they're going to be putting on an 8-round exhibition fight. And some of the latest news I heard was that they're actually going to get this fight to be cleared where it's going to be for like a belt, I guess, for like an exhibition belt, you know, I guess for just one, you know, just some type of exhibition belt or maybe like a diamond belt or something like that. I don't know which sanctioning body it's going to be. You know, I don't know if it's going to be a WBC or WBA, but they're going to make a belt for it. And I think the fight is actually going to count on their record too. So that's crazy. You know, they're really trying to push this thing and go all out and make it something bigger, you know? So I just kind of find that interesting now. You know, I guess they really want this thing to be promoted right. You know, that's why they kind of want to push it back. Cause I know Roy Jones, you know, he's getting in some training, you know, he's training other fighters, and maybe like as he was getting sharper and sharper, he was probably like, yo, we should probably push this out, especially with like the buzz it's been getting. Cause you know, I've actually been hearing a lot of casual fans that don't even really know boxing. As soon as they hear Mike Tyson's back, you know, they've been like, oh, I got to see this. You know, it's been 15 years since I seen Mike in the ring. I want to see what he looks like now. You know, even the hardcore fans, you know, they're like, Roy Jones, you know, he coming back. I want to see how he handles this type of animal in Mike. You know, we want to know if Mike is going to be somewhat of an animal like he was in the past, you know, and they just kind of want to, they really want to see that matchup. Cause you know, Mike, he's actually been saying that he's going to go in for a knockout. You know, he's actually coming to bring the fight to Roy. So I think it's just really making for an interesting storyline. You know, you got 250 year old fighters who really, you know, in all hindsight have no business being in the ring anymore, just because they've both kind of gone their separate ways out of boxing into other ventures where we know they don't really have what it takes to really compete on the elite level anymore. You know, of course, Mike, you know, he's doing a podcast, you know, he's got a dispensary or whatever, and he's just really been getting into other things where he's making money in safer outlets now, you know. So you got Roy on the other side who still definitely has both feet in boxing, but not in the ring, you know, as far as, you know, making money as a fighter. But, you know, he's a trainer in Russia. He's training fighters here in the States. Shout out to Michael Williams Jr. He's training a fighter I know personally. And he's also he still does a little bit of, I don't know if he still does a lot of commentating, but, you know, he's still seen a lot on YouTube as a boxing guru, you know. So he still has both of his feet in boxing in some way. So when you think about it, every time you do hear the name Mike Tyson and you do hear the name Roy Jones, there is always going to be like a flame in them that kind of light them up to actually want to test themselves. So that I can kind of understand where at some point they're going to feel like, I need to get back in the ring, but against who, you know what I mean? So they'll want to test themselves at some point of their, in their lives again, as crazy as it sounds, you know, they're going to want to get to that point. So I really feel like that's why they kind of pushed the fight back, because they saw there was more buzz into it and they can actually make this something bigger. I think the real reason is they see bigger promotion in this thing now. You know, they see that the buzz is there for this fight and that a lot of people are really wanting to see this thing, you know. And, you know, this is Mike returning after 15 years. You know, since then he's done like this sparring exhibition like a few years back, but he hasn't really been in the ring in a real fight, you know. And to see Mike back after all these years, I think they really seen what kind of course this thing is taking, you know, Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube, all the people talking about it. You know, a lot of people want to see this thing, so they want to make this thing bigger, you know. Of course, they're doing like a 10-part docuseries too, so I was kind of wondering about that myself. Like when this thing was announced last month and the fight is in September, I was like, how are they really going to do all this? Like, did they finish the 10-part series or do they want to do more? Did they not get all the footage they wanted? So I was kind of, yeah, they really are pushing it. You know, they really were pushing it if they wanted to make this thing like a big thing for Mike's return to the ring, even if it is an exhibition. So I said, okay, I can understand why they're pushing this back now. Because, again, you know, both fighters stand to make a good amount of money from this, you know. So I could definitely understand why they want to take the time and make this thing a little bit bigger than it is. And just kind of, again, like I said, be kind of a incentive to the younger champions, to make the younger champions say big names can get in the ring. And also big names need to get in the ring before they reach this age. You know, that's the part that I'm really looking at. You know, we don't want to see Errol Spence and Terrence Crawford in the ring at like 64 years old. You know what I mean? Like fighting for some IBF tinfoil belt or anything like that. We want to see it right now when it counts. So y'all need to really take lesson to see what they're doing to make you say, we better do this now while we're in our 30s, while we're in our primes, while we got all the belts, and make this fight now. So yeah, I am one of the guys that want to see Mike and Roy in the ring. You know, I've always wanted to see them in the ring whenever Roy was in his prime. I've said this before, back in 2003, I wanted to see the fight, but you know, they're getting in there now. So I just really want to see it at this point. It's more of a nostalgia thing for me to see them in the ring. But yeah, I think that the real reason is just promotion. I think they just want to promote it a little bit more. At the same time, maybe train a little more. It's probably like incentive for Roy, you know, to say, hey, you know, I see these guys in here. I'm working on my skills too. So let me get them right. Then I can get right with them. Then by October, I can, you know, really tighten down and I'll be ready for November. So between him and Mike, they're probably really want to get sharp and just kind of let the people see them. You know, let them see them from the outside looking in and just see them get ready, man. So, yeah, I'm for it. You know, I'm still going to watch it. You know, I'm still going to definitely want to support two of my favorite fighters growing up as far as, you know, the excitement and thrill they used to bring into the ring. So, you know, November 28th, I'm going to watch. But, yeah, man, on to this big topic. I don't want to say big topic because I'll give you my 2 cents on it. And, you know, that's how I feel. You know, that's how I feel. It's not a big debate. Paulie Milinaja getting fired from Showtime over some comments that he made a few months ago. You know, everybody remembers Devin Haney making the statement, I'll never let a white boy beat me, referring to Luke Campbell or Vasyl Lomachenko. Well, you know, Paulie, he kind of went in and gave his 2 cents on, it wasn't even really like directed at Devin Haney like it should have been. It kind of just turned into a statement where he really kind of wanted to let go and show his true colors on how he felt about certain people. That's how I kind of took it. That's how I took it, because I've seen it before. You know, I've seen it around the way and like in arguments, when you get in an argument with somebody and they just show their true colors. Like, Devin's the individual, and he made the statement, but then Paulie just kind of opens up, and it's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, they're all like that, or like, they're all this bad. You know what I mean? Like, it just turned into one of those situations, you know? Like, let me pull this thing up here. Yeah, like, we're going to read some of these statements that Paulie made real quick, and then I'll just kind of give you my thoughts on it. First up is where he said in the middle of his conversation, boxing has had its course in history with certain demographics dominating more than others, right? Maybe like 100 years ago, Irish fighters were better. And then the Jews and the Italians came in. And I think the African-American fighter became the most dominant in the sport in the 70s, 80s, and even 90s, you know? It's not great to have the race discussion because it's going to coordinate division. I don't know if Devin got the memo. It's no longer the time of the African-American anymore in boxing. So that's a real statement I just wanted to talk about right there. But the next one, it's the Eastern Europeans that has become the dominant species in boxing. I think stating something like Haney's statement, that could be very dangerous. So for me, Devin Haney's statement, it wasn't as dangerous as people think it was. I think it was just one of those controversial statements where this is how he kind of speaks when it comes to being competitive. You know, I think a lot of people didn't take it too harsh when Devin Haney said it, because to me, it was just kind of like him referring to, again, like the how race is kind of separated in America. And this is how he sees it. You know, it wasn't like he said, I'll never let a racial slur for white people beat me. You know what I mean? He just said, I'll never let a white boy beat me, because that's kind of how we see it out in the world. You know, everything is black and white out here, you know, whether it's blacks going against cops, or, you know, just a black man trying to walk in the store and get his stuff without being side-eyed, or, you know, a black man just walk into his apartment without being questioned by somebody that lives in the area, you know, or you being blocked off while you're trying to go into your building. You know what I mean? Every day you're at odds with somebody every day you're at odds with a Karen now. You know, you're always with odds with somebody. So it is kind of like a fight where he's kind of sees it the same way. Like, I can't let a white boy beat me in the sense of that word. So the way Devin Haney referred to it, it wasn't really like I think really like a hit and dig at all white people. You know, he just meant it in the way it's like, maybe this is how I see it. You know, this is just how I see it as far as being competition. But the more that Paulie kind of opened up on what he was saying, it just kind of showed you his true colors on how he feels about on the African-American fighters in boxing, and him thinking that the Eastern European fighters are better, you know. And the way he made the statement too, it's not even like a professional observation to me, you know. Him being an analyst for Showtime, I'm thinking that, you know, you would get some actual jewels from this guy or some real knowledge where you kind of look from the outside and say, okay, I can stand on this statement because this is what's really going on. But like, what he said didn't really hold any weight. You know, like, for you to say like the Eastern European fighters have become the most dominant in boxing, that's not really true. To me, they're in the pool of this great amount of talent we have from all over the world now, but they don't stand above the rest. You know, to me, they don't stand above the rest, like a Vasyl Lomachenko and a Oleksandr Usyk. They fall into this category of all these other great champions that are fighting right now. They fall in with Crawford's, the Spences, you know, the Anthony Joshua's, the Deontay Wilders. But they don't stand ahead above the rest right now because they could be beat just like that. You know, somebody in this pool has the skill to beat them. And that goes for the Spencers and the Crawfords too. Like, everybody is competitive right now. Everybody's competitive, you know, and that's what makes boxing like so fun to watch for me, because you just have all these different walks of lives. Now you have the Black American fighter, you got the Eastern European fighter, you got Argentinian fighter, fighters from Argentina, you got Mexican fighters, you got Haitian fighters, you got African fighters, you know, you got Australian fighters, and they all fall into this pool, and you got guys from all these walks of lives that hold belts. And you never know which one's going to be really holding it that long now, because one guy around, you know, from this country, he might have the style to beat this guy. And this guy here might have the style to beat that guy. So there's never really like a way that I feel like Usyk was the dominant guy in the sport, or Lomachenko and Usyk together were like, oh man, Eastern Europeans taking over. You know, I never felt that way. And then for him to say something like, it's no longer the time of the African-American anymore in boxing, I'm like, you make it sound like there's a job application now. They're just turning down job applications in boxing for the Black American fighters. So like they're being turned away from gyms, or they're getting knocked out in every single fight now. It's like, what boxing is he watching, really? Because you got Errol Spence Jr., unified division, the welterweight division, considered number one in the welterweight division. Then you got Terrence Crawford, who's considered pound for pound the best fighter in the world. You got Tank Davis, you know, three-time world champion now, that under Floyd Mayweather's wing. Then you got Devin Haney now with his own promotional company. He seems like the guy to beat right now, and everybody's got their eyes on him. You got Shakur Stevenson, former Olympic medalist. He's over here at top rank, you know, doing his numbers. Then you got the twins. You got Charlo's running the 154-pound division and the middleweight division, you know. So for him to say it's no longer a time for them, it doesn't even sound like he's saying, okay, they're not the dominant ones in the sport. He's just saying, like, it's no longer the time of the African-American fighter. So how I'm reading that is saying that they hold no weight. They hold no belts. They're no longer competitive. So when he's saying that statement, and that's how I'm seeing, perceiving that, I'm like, that's not true. That's not true. You still have a lot of Black champions out there, more so than the Eastern Europeans. You know, the Eastern Europeans are catching up. Again, like I said, they're all falling into a great pool of competition. So you can't say that one is really over the other. But if you wanted to make a strong argument, you could definitely say that the Black fighters are being dominant. They definitely are being dominant. They are running divisions, and they definitely are unifying divisions. So just as much, you know, Oleksandr, he unified cruiserweight. Vasyl Lomachenko, he's unified division. So yeah, it's all kind of falling in line where you could say, okay, everybody is kind of pulling their weight now. Fighters are getting better and better. And when you think about it too, Black fighters are still showing their dominance, just not in the ring, but just by influence. Because when you look at a lot of the things that Oleksandr Usyk and Vasyl Lomachenko do, Vasyl wouldn't be able to box where he is without a Roy Jones, you know, because he said he grew up watching Roy Jones. So his style is really Black-based. And the speed and the fluidity of a guy like Oleksandr Usyk, he's out there moving like a boxer. You know, he's out there moving like some of these, you know, like a Floyd. You know, he's out there jabbing volume punches and, you know, stepping side to side with more rhythm than the average Eastern European fighter. You know, just straight up and down, come forward style, you know, mid-range fighter. He's actually showing more skill levels like a Black fighter, both of them, down to the haircuts, right? So the Black fighter is always going to be some type of show some type of influence there because of their boxing style was so defensive, you know, and I think a lot of fighters are kind of growing off of that. And to be competitive and to beat some of these guys, they have to kind of learn that style. You know, they have to kind of learn that style. Same with the Mexican fighters. You know, Canelo, to me, he doesn't show just Mexican style in boxing. You know, ever since that 12-round boxing lesson from Floyd, he's moving like a Floyd now, you know. So the presence of the Black fighter, even if it ain't their own, it's being shown in all these other fighters of different nationalities, which to me, that's still a form of being in the sport and being dominant in the sport and showing you that it's still their time. You know, as long as you see these guys still slipping and sliding like Floyd and, you know, dancing around like Ali or trying these angles like Roy, that's going to show you that the African-American fighter is always going to have a place in boxing. And last comparison I did want to make it to was that Paulie, you know, again, his observation wasn't really professional is the way he said that. That's just more his opinion saying, okay, no longer the time of the African-American boxer anymore. That again, that holds no weight. But if he would have did some more like professional research, just saying like, let's say maybe back in 2005, you know, at the time whenever Vladimir Klitschko, Ruslan, Chagiev, Nikolai Valuyev, Abragimov, Alexander Povetkin, all these guys at the time were at the top of the heavyweight division. Now, if you would have said back then, you would have said, okay, Eastern Europeans are, okay, it looked like they're taking over the heavyweight division. That would have held more weight, you know, because at the time, Chris Bird had lost a belt. Hasim Rahman lost a belt. Then you had other guys in there like there was the other Russian fighter that had beat Hasim Rahman. His name escapes me right now. But, yeah, all these guys were at the top of the division, and there was proof there. You know, there was more proof there to say something like that because – all the belt holders were Eastern European at the time. And then Klitschko, he eventually wound up unifying the division. And he was the man in the division, you know? So then you could have said, okay, black American fighters in the heavyweight division is still there, is still being competitive, but the division was Eastern Europeans at that time, you know, that was when they were dominant. But overall, like in the sport of boxing, when you're looking at the sport as a whole, you can't say that Eastern Europeans are the dominant species, and you can't say that African Americans are no more in boxing. You know, to me, again, that just sounds like an ignorant statement, and it makes you sound like they're saying they're played out, which they never will be. But yeah, man, that's really all I got on that one. Like I said, as far as Paulie getting fired for those ignorant statements, I'm definitely not a person to wish bad on anybody. Especially in this time, you know, not wishing anybody to lose money or lose their job or lose life or anything like that. But I really feel like people ask for what they get. You know, they really are asking for what they get in certain situations. Like if you put out this type of energy in this type of particular time going on now, then that's what you're going to get back. So you can't really get mad at anybody but yourself, especially again, like when your statements aren't really professional as far as just kind of looking at boxing as a whole. You're more so just saying it's just like if you say, okay, I prefer white fighters over black fighters, you know, that's kind of what his statement said to me. And you kind of took the bait whenever you let a guy like Devin Haney just say what he said. Like I said, with Devin Haney saying what he said, that was just like a competitive statement. He's not an analyst, he's just a fighter, you know what I mean? So you just kind of took the bait and ran with it and just showed your true colors. But yeah, man, let me know in the comment section how y'all feel about what Paulie said. Like I said, you know, that people get what they ask for. You know, that's just all I got to say. I don't wish him getting fired, but he got fired for a reason, right? Moving on, November 21st, like I said, it's going down. Errol Spence Jr. versus Danny Garcia, one of the top divisions in boxing now. Errol Spence, you know, against Danny Garcia, people have said that they said they don't like this fight. They feel like this fight shouldn't happen, but I want to see Terrence Crawford. I want to see Terrence Crawford. I want to see Errol fight Manny Pacquiao. But they just don't understand. You know, Errol's coming off a car accident, very, very horrible car accident. On top of that, he's been out of the game for, 14 months now. Going on 14 months when this fight takes place, so – I just feel like people have to understand that there has to be some type of stepping stone. And I think Errol Spence is taking the proper steps to get back into the ring. But it's not like this fight's just like a simple tune-up he's taking. He's really taking a very dangerous fight if you look at this fight. This is another solid fight for Errol Spence. And it makes a lot of sense for Errol to take this fight. And in a few different ways, because again, think of it, 14 months off and you want to get back in the ring, you know, you could have got back in there against a guy like a C-level or D-level guy that nobody knows. You could have got back in there with the guy that Sean Porter's facing. Like, no knock to Sean Porter. I mean, Sean's probably just trying to get back into the ring and stay active. But Sebastian Formella, like, if Errol chose that opponent, he's a young undefeated fighter. I think, of course, people would have understood. I understand, okay, you want to take that fight. You know, you're just coming off a long layoff and an accident. We understand if you want to take that guy, but there would have still been other fans saying, oh, who the hell is he fighting? You know, they still would have said something. So I think the next best thing would have been a Danny Garcia, which he's taking. You know, he's taking a Danny Garcia, who is a top five fighter. And I think that's a perfect fight to come back and say, hey, I still got it, you know. And whether or not you think Danny is good skill-wise, he still is a ranked guy. And on paper, that's a name. You know that's definitely another name. So if Errol beats him, that definitely sounds better on Errol's record versus Errol comes back after long layoff beating Formella versus Errol comes back after long layoff beats top five opponent Danny Garcia after a car accident. You know, that sounds much better, right? After coming off an injury and still taking a power punch on Danny Garcia, that says a lot, you know. And it's always been in Errol's heart. Like, every time you hear him speak, he's always mentioned in the big names. He's always mentioning somebody that holds some type of weight to build him up financially, but at the same time, build his legacy up, which is something I feel like a lot of fighters don't have balance. So, you know, a lot of guys want the money, but they don't want to earn it. But the best way to say it, Errol is a guy that likes to earn his check. You know what I mean? He likes to earn his check. You know, he wants to fight the best fighters, but at the same time, he still wants, you know, he definitely wants the money. You know, that's what every fighter wants. He wants the money, but you can always say if he wants $3 million for this fight, he wants $2 million for this fight. Well, he's definitely earning it versus, you know, my last topic of Teofimo, you know, somebody like that, you know, outpricing themselves. Like, yeah, I'll definitely jump on that one. But somebody like Errol Spence saying something like, okay, I want $3 million for a fight with Danny, that makes more sense, you know, because Danny, when you look at his resume, his stock is better than, you know, just take his stock is better than a lot of people give him credit for. And the second part I wanted to really say about this fight is, you know, I really feel like people can't sleep on Danny. You know, people cannot sleep on Danny Garcia as a fighter. Like, if we look at his resume, okay, he moved up to 147, and he was beat by top guys like Keith Thurman and Sean Porter. But that's what it really take. That's what type of fighter it really took to beat somebody like Danny Garcia. Then, right? So that should tell you what level he stands on. Like, he's not a Crawford, and he wasn't a Thurman, and he's not a Spence, but he's that second tier guy, you know, and that's the caliber of fighter that Errol Spence wants to reach for. If he can't get the top level yet, he wants that second tier, because, you know, that's still competition. So Danny Garcia is a top level guy, a second tier guy. So again, you can't sleep on this guy. Danny Garcia, when you look at his style, technically, Everything he does in there is it's a dangerous style matchup for Errol Spence. You know, you can disagree with me or not. I mean, you can disagree with me. You can call me crazy, but that's why Errol wants to take the fight. You know, he knows it's going to be a competition in there. You know, Errol never wants to take a bad fight. Technically, Danny Garcia, when you look at him, the way he keeps his feet planted, you know, people call it just flat-footed, like he's flat-footed and slow. But if you look at Danny Garcia, how he keeps his feet planted, he's a puncher. You know, he's always in a position to punch. You know, every step he takes, he's always putting himself in a position to land something. You know, he's either walking you down, stalking you down, and he's keeping himself planted. So that style might really pose a threat to Errol right now, depending on what Errol looks like. You know, if Errol looks sharp like he did in the Porter fight or before that, then maybe not. But coming back after a car accident, we don't know how Errol's legs are going to look, how he'll react to certain, like, shots. So we'll see how he reacts to somebody who puts effective pressure on him like Danny. You know, Danny, again, has that style that can kind of walk you down. He's always poised and ready to punch. And being flat-footed is not a bad thing. You know, being flat-footed is not a it's not a style that a guy like well, let's say like this. Being flat-footed, it's not a curse. You know, people – so many people think being flat-footed in boxing is a bad thing. But if you really utilize it for what you bring to the ring, like if you are a puncher, then you want to be flat-footed. You know, if speed isn't your thing and punching is your thing, then you got to keep your feet always planted the way Danny does and keep them set, you know. Strong. Another thing, Danny Garcia is strong. You know, Danny has really good strength for this division. You know, moving up from 140, I think people don't give him enough credit. He has the height, and he definitely has the strength. When you look at him in size matchup, he is a little bit taller than Keith Thurman. He's taller than Sean Porter. Sean Porter, I don't know if it was just in Sean to choose the box in the first time him and Danny Garcia fought, but he never really was in there dogging Danny Garcia. You know, he was never really in there like muscling him or you know, giving him hell like he was trying to in the Keith Thurman fights and the Errol Spence fight. You know, he was really like showing Danny respect, and like even times whenever he would try to like bull rush Danny, like Danny would like stay planted on his feet and kind of push back, you know. Other guys like Adrian Granados try to get in on Danny, and Danny would just kind of give him the shove back and, you know, land the left hook. That's another thing. The left hook and the right hand of Danny is dangerous. You know, he's always poised to punch. So every time he lets these shots go when he's in range, you know, he's throwing everything behind him. Because, again, he's throwing from the waist. You know, he's throwing with everything on these shots. You know, he's slipping, using mostly upper body movement. Then he's coming back with, you know, slick counters. So there's a lot of things that Danny does, you know, that I feel like that are underrated, because people just see the one thing, you know, they just see the one thing, and then they just saw him get outboxed by the speedy guys like Porter and Thurman, and then they want to count him out. But there's a lot of things that got him belts, you know. There's a lot of things that got him to unify the 140-pound division, beat these other guys. Beat these other level guys, the below level guys at welterweight, but helped him keep his status. You know, he definitely has enough skills that helped him keep his status at 147. Also the chin, you know, the chin is going to be a problem for this fight. You know, if Errol doesn't land anything good and clean on Danny Garcia's chin, it's going to be a long night. You know, Danny's going to stay in it for the long haul. You know, Danny always has the stamina to go 12 rounds. Again, he has the strength and the endurance to go 12 rounds. So until Errol lands something big on that chin to really test it and show what power he possesses, you know, Danny's going to hang in there. So that's another thing. You know, the chin's been tested in the Keith Thurman fight. And again, like the pressure really kept Sean Porter from landing anything too big on Danny Garcia. So he has ways to handle punches. You know, Danny has a very high durability when it comes to taking punches. You know, he knows how to save himself, because again, when he keeps his feet planted the way he does, he can keep his balance. You know, he's not flat-footed like some guys that are kind of off balance on the back heels of their feet. He's got his feet solid to the ground, so if he gets hit, he can just kind of squat down and grab you real quick and hold. So yeah, Danny's recovery and his ability to take a punch, you know, he's strong. He's all around a strong fighter. Like may not have the high IQ like the Thurmans or the Crawfords, but yeah, he's definitely a strong fighter. So I think there's a lot of factors that make this fight closer on paper whenever you factor in Errol's layoff in the accident. But again, if Errol comes in sharp, if he comes in, you know, pre-Porter fight, or even like that style or prime Porter, you'll see more of a Errol dominant fight. Like, of course, Errol can't approach the fight the way he did the Sean Porter fight. You know, you don't want to go in there chin out, trying to punch on the inside with Danny like that. You don't want to do that style. But I'm just saying, like, Errol was fresher in that fight. You know, that was the pre-accident. So if Errol comes in not missing a beat, then I think that he'll have more of a chance of outboxing Danny Garcia. You know, I think he'll have more of a chance of, you know, putting in good work and being more dominant. But right now, like I said, coming off a layoff, it definitely looks more competitive on paper, you know, because Danny has a lot going for him that I feel a lot of underrated skill that a lot of people don't take a look at that's going to make this a good fight. And again, shout out to Errol Spence because, you know, Errol wants to prove that he is the best. So, again, coming back to the ring against a name, you know, you got to give him credit for that. You definitely got to give Errol credit. So I'm looking forward to this fight. I'm definitely looking forward to this because it's going to be another name on Spence's side to make Terrence Crawford at some point, you know, look at him and say, damn, I got to get some names. You know what I mean? I got to get somebody on my resume and make my worth look more. And this might be something I'll discuss in a video, but like, that's why I disagree with Roy whenever he said Roy said Spence has to beat Crawford to be the number one guy in the welterweight division. Not necessarily because Spence has already unified the division. He's got two of the more prestigious belts and he's already beat bigger names. And when he adds Danny to that list, then it's going to look even better, you know? And if he gets Manny Pacquiao, like he could beat Danny and Manny and to me be the number one welterweight. He wouldn't need Crawford at that point because he'd be outweighing Crawford, where Crawford just has a mean machine con in a Jeff Horn. That doesn't really prove that you're the number one welterweight. Maybe pound for pound because you dominated more divisions. But when it comes down to the actual division, it's Errol's division right now. So that's something I'll probably discuss in another video, though. I just want to break that down for y'all why I disagree with Roy on that one. But, yeah, man, again, let me know in the comment section what y'all think, man. Spence Garcia, I like this fight. You know, I know a lot of people don't. But, yeah, I gave you my thoughts on that. All right, y'all, and last topic, Maciej Lomachenko is willing to take a pay cut versus Teofimo Lopez to get this fight going. First off, with that statement alone, man, that just shows you, like, the heart of the real champion in this fight and who really, really wants to fight. Like, I'm not the biggest Maciej Lomachenko fan, but I know that at this point, you know, he is the guy that wants to accomplish something, and the money's important, but at the same time, he knows that somebody like Teofimo Lopez is not really going to cave on this. You know, they're going to keep trying to hold back and make excuses on why not to make this fight happen. So now Lomachenko's really calling his bluff. You know, he's like, okay, so it's the money now. Well, here's the rest of the money that you want. We'll make it close to 50-50. How about now? So they're really putting Teofimo Lopez into that corner now. So I'd really like to know his mind state now that money is up to $2 million for Teofimo. Now, what's going to be his other excuse if this fight doesn't happen? Because now the money's up. Now the fight can happen. What else is it that Teofimo is going to want? What other kind of diva demands he's going to have to make this fight happen? And, yeah, this whole topic, man, like, as far as just, like, going in on this, man, I feel like it's just something that's really been going on in boxing for a while now, you know, where you have a lot of young champions that really don't know their worth. They think they know it, but they don't. You know, they think they get one little belt and they think they get this big following that they deserve so much money now. And I think it just happens to come with the social media thing. You know, when you get a lot of likes and followers on Instagram, they think that's really worth a lot. But in the boxing world, a lot of things stay the same, man. When it still comes down to opponents on your resume, you know, opponents on your resume still stand for a lot, you know, and that's how you really make it in the game. And that's how you really hold stock and hold weight. You know, like I said, Maciej Lomachenko, I'm not the biggest fan. I still feel like there's some competition out there he needs to beat, but going into this fight, his resume still holds a lot more weight. You know, he's a guy with more belts. He's a guy with more names on his resume versus Teofimo. Besides Teofimo's IBF strap against Richard Comey, I don't really see that weighing up to $2 million or weighing the same amount that Maciej Lomachenko's getting. But first off, right here, Lopez, he's offered $1.2 million to fight Maciej Lomachenko, but he wants $2 million. Lomachenko, he said to be getting $3.4 million for this fight. So Lomachenko, he's willing to give up $800,000 to get this deal done. So he gives up his $800,000, he'll wind up getting $2.6 million, and Teofimo will get $2 million. So in order to make this fight happen and make Teofimo happy and to really call his bluff, he's going to balance this thing out himself. He's willing to take the purse, part of his purse, give it to Teofimo and say, okay, there's your $2 million. Are you ready now? You know, so I think that's very big of Lomachenko. Again, you know, that shows you another heart of a champion, where the champion is saying, look, it's not just about money, man. It's about making a legacy. You know, it's about putting on this show now. You know, this year's almost over. This fight's been talked about. There's been a lot of holdups, hangups with this fight. You know, first thing that put us on pause was the COVID-19. Now that that's, you know, kind of died down, we found a way to get boxing going again. Now it's you out here saying there's not enough money. Well, I'm putting my money up here. I'm calling you out. If I give you this money, will you take the fight? You know, so we still have yet to really say solidified on their side, but Vasil, he put it out there. He put that purse, he put portion of his purse out there to balance this thing out. So now Teofimo just needs to take it. But as far as him getting the $2 million, I really don't think that Teofimo's proven anything on his resume to get $2 million. You know, he's not really a $2 million fighter yet. Like I said, besides beating Richard Comey and having one strap, that's not worth, you know, that's not really worth the same. And, you know, okay, if Vasil is getting 2.6 with three belts and more names on your resume, then that doesn't really balance out nice. You know, that doesn't really, that really doesn't show you really don't hold the same weight as him as a fighter. You know, outside of the hardcore fans, not too many people know who Teofimo Lopez is, you know. So for him to try to get the same amount of money as Vasil, I just think that's kind of just a diva move. Maybe, again, to outprice himself to say, oh, Lomachenko don't want it. If it don't happen, he can kind of blame Lomachenko and, you know, say it was politics. And the next question I had about it, too, was that, is Teofimo just trying to, like, outprice himself? You know, is he not that confident in his skill? Is he just trying to outprice himself to say, let me secure a big payday in case this beating or this loss is really bad and I really have to go back to the drawing board? You know, is it one of those situations? Because why would you just go in, like, the biggest fight of your career against the biggest opponent and try to get this big purse instead of just saying, oh, man, like, 1.2, let me take that 1.2 and make a big statement. You know, I got to beat this guy, because everybody knows that your first opportunity for a big fight, it's not going to be like the biggest money. You know, the first big opportunity you get ain't going to be a huge payday. It's going to be a small amount to kind of test you to see, is it going to be about the fight? Are you going to see the big picture? Or are you just going to go for the big money that you, the big purse that you see in front of you? You know, are you going to be able to say, okay, man, like, I can take this small amount now, beat this guy, and then open all the doors? Are you just trying to look at, you know, the one open door in front of you right now? And I think that's what Teofimo is trying to do. You know, Teofimo sees a first opportunity that comes along, he wants to outprice himself just in case things don't go right. But that ain't how it is, man. If you really invested the time to become the champion that you are and you really feel confident in your style, then you should say, okay, I'm willing to take the less amount of money against the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world and then make that big statement. When I beat him, the doors are open. You know, that's how you're supposed to see it. But there's that other angle to it, man, where it's like a lot of people and myself are kind of thinking like he's just trying to secure a cash-out payday in case he gets beat bad, you know. That's what it's kind of looking like, because he's not worth $2 million for this fight. And last part of that angle I wanted to talk about is just like a lot of young fighters, you know, really overbelieve in their hype, you know. And for one, I think it is because of social media today, too. You know, a lot of followers on Instagram and a lot of hits on Instagram and Twitter kind of give fighters a false hope that they are better than they are. But like I said, man, boxing, you know, a lot of the things that go on in boxing besides road work and a lot of the physical training is timeless. Like, resumes, you know, actual resumes and what you do in the ring, it still holds the same weight as it did back in like the 1980s and all the way back to the 40s and so on. You know, like what you do in the ring still holds that most weight because that shows the heart of the champion and the guys that can beat. But like getting a bunch of followers on Instagram and a lot of people telling you better than you are, building up your hype that way, that's not really, that's not how you build your stock up saying, okay, I'm worth this much, you know, because it still all comes down to who you beat, you know, not who follows you on Instagram. It doesn't matter if some big celebrities follow you on Instagram. No, man, it still comes down to who you beat in the ring. And right now you just beat a Richard Comey for an IBF title. That's not $2 million worth. You know, that's not $2 million worth right there. You know, so that doesn't balance out with Lomachenko's his accomplishments. So that's just something, another thing. Yeah, I feel like a lot of guys are really overhyping themselves now. And again, man, like I said, it all comes down to just using this time, this opportunity to prove yourself. You know, just go in there and think of the fight and what it can bring you, not what in the long run, but not in the now. You know, stop trying to get out. Stop trying to get so much now and just, you know, let the hard work pay off. You know, 1.2 is fair now. Then after that, you just go in here, make the statement that you've been making that you could beat Lomachenko, beat him, and then the doors are open from there. You know, then you'll probably get a Tank fight. Then you'll probably get a Devin Haney fight. Then you'll probably get a Ryan Garcia fight. Whenever, that's when the money starts coming in. The money comes in after you prove something. Not before you even proved anything, you know. So yeah, man, that's really all I got on this one for now. But yeah, that's just how I feel about the situation right now. I think that Vasyl Lomachenko, he's being the bigger man, and he's the one that's really saying, you know, I want this fight. And by doing that, he had to cut into his money, which I kind of hated for him, you know, because I wish it could have just came down to them saying, okay, we're gonna turn our back, we're not gonna give you the fight, you know. But he really wanted to fight, so he said, okay, I'm going to show you it's not all about money. I'm going to show you it's not all about money here. Stop crying about your money. There's the other $800,000. Now, will you fight me? So hopefully that gets the fight done. As far as technical breakdown, you know, I'll do that. But right now I do favor Vasyl Lomachenko in this fight, you know, and it could be a situation, like I said, Teofimo trying to look for that cash out now, in case he gets beat pretty bad in there, gets boxed out, you know, gets some ears boxed off. But yeah, let me know in the comment section what y'all guys think. You know, do you think Teofimo was just trying to cash out? And do you like the approach that Lomachenko is taking as far as, you know, giving him part of his purse? But yeah, man, that's all I got on this one, guys. Like I said, I'll be back with a women's MMA episode for y'all. I just wanted to do these topics here in boxing, and just give me some of y'all comments on some of this boxing talk I drop on y'all. But yeah, that's all I got, guys. Make sure y'all follow me on Instagram at allboxingeverything. That's my boxing Instagram. And you can follow me on my personal one at combobreaker99. And I'll probably start posting this show on a website pretty soon where you can hear it on different platforms like iTunes and Spotify and everything like that. But for now, just subscribe to me on YouTube, and you can hear me, you know, do these shows on YouTube. And I'll probably post this one up to do with the live stream a little bit later today. But yeah, that's all I got, guys. Make sure y'all subscribe. Combo Breaker 99. I'm out. Peace.